ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 20 टेक्स्ट 18 Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sasarja chayaya vidyam pancha parvanam agrataha tamistram andhatamistram tamo moho mahatamaha Well, we get knowledge like this. This one verse and purport gives more knowledge of the material world than in all the universities of the world put together. More knowledge means this is more important than anything that they teach. University that's called in Indian languages Vishva Vidyalay. In Tamil? No, they always have to have something different. Means a place where there's knowledge of the universe. But actually, it's Vishva Vidyalaya, it's knowledge of the, it's the place of the ignorance of the universe. But because they're in ignorance, that they don't know that they're in ignorance. What that ignorance is described in this verse. Ignorance, avidya, is not defined simply as a negation of vidya or knowledge. It is not merely an absence of knowledge, but it has its own specific symptoms also. Or rather, the absence of knowledge leads to various symptoms. Interestingly, these tamisra, andha tamisra, two phases of ignorance, they're also the names of two prominent hells. Knowledge of Krishna is bliss. Ignorance of Krishna, or lack of knowledge of Krishna, that is hell. Everyone sees the world, or in the human form of life, in particular, everyone sees the world through a certain world view. Whether they know it or not, everyone has some kind of philosophy. Philosophy in the sense that, well, how we understand everything. The basic philosophy of the conditioned soul is that of seeing everything in the world as something for him to try to enjoy, or to try to avoid. I should enjoy the objects which I can enjoy, and those things which cause me displeasure or pain, objects or people that cause me displeasure or pain, I should try to avoid. I should try to bring within my grasp all the things that I want to enjoy. And I should avoid or try to dominate and control things or people that cause me displeasure, dominate and control them so they cannot cause me displeasure. Everyone is trying to dominate everyone and everything as much as he can. And for dealing with people that he cannot control, that cause him fear, then there is politics and diplomacy. So everyone in this world is trying to dominate others. And those he cannot dominate, he makes some adjustment with. And in those rare cases where someone appears to be able to dominate all other living beings, then he thinks, I am God. Certain persons like Hiranyakashipu, Vena, they actually thought they were God because they thought that they were dominating all other living beings and that all other living beings were in their subjugation. The desire to control is the perverted reflection of the pure desire to serve Krishna. And just as one who is fixed in pure bliss when he's in the consciousness of serving Krishna, so one who gets in the position of being very powerful and controlling others has a perverted reflection of happiness in doing so. It feels so good to dominate others and to see others just do whatever I say out of fear of me. We can just imagine what kind of intoxication Hitler had when all the German people, great majority of the German people, they hailed him in big rallies as the leader, and all big powerful men, they were subservient to him. They would do whatever he said. And he caused tremendous fear in the Jews and the Poles and the French and the British and all others. So this is one phase of ignorance. When one is envious of Krishna, then he wants to dominate and control others. So that is a manifestation of anger, which is herein called tamasra. And Srila Prabhupada points out here that even in the field of spiritual realization, this tamasra mentality is hard to overcome. If we see someone who's a sadhu and yogi meditating, we may think, oh, he's very peaceful and very pure. But his aim, his thinking that I will become God, is actuated by envy and anger. He's frustrated that he cannot control, and therefore he wants to become one with God, to consider himself one with God. So yogis at a certain stage of their success, they are blessed with the material energy by yoga siddhis, by which it appears to them and to people as foolish as them that they are controlling material nature. They can walk on water. They can vanish from one place and appear in another place. They can, just by looking at people, hypnotize them. There's so many, you know, they can just produce. You want something? Pomegranate? Oh, okay, here it is. Take it. So it appears that they are controlling material nature. Let them control the cyclone. They can live a very long life also, and even remain young-looking while doing so. So it may seem that they have conquered death. It's all an illusion. Ignorant. Simply they're offered that facility because they are childish. You see, so someone is studying scriptures, performing austerity, very deeply absorbed in spiritual knowledge. But yeah, his aim is to become one with God. Someone else is performing severe austerities in yoga practice with the aim to become God or become one with God. Just like a child, the foolish desire. Just like a child may play, I am the king. And just as he's absorbed in thinking he's the king, and actually he thinks that he's the king. But he's just a foolish child. But his mother may give him a toy sword so that he can feel more in the role of being a king. So mother material nature gives the yogis some siddhi, impersonalists some apparent realization by which they think, I have become God. But it's just childish. We call someone childish if they're of adult age but of the foolish, egoistic mentality of a child. Give me this! Rah! There's another word in it. Obviously this is English. Childlike. That is a... childish is a derogatory term. Childlike is, especially among spiritualists, it's considered a desirable attribute. But it's not something that can be cultivated, because the very meaning of childlike is to be naturally innocent and without egoism. We see that Srila Prabhupada, even though most expert in dealing with the world. He could be more cunning than the most cunning politician. But sometimes he exhibited childlike innocence. For instance, once in an airport lounge, there were so many devotees, they were blocking the passage for all other users of the airport. So one of the airport staff said to one of the leading devotees there that, look, all of you devotees have to leave this airport lounge. You're just making, just causing a disturbance. So that devotee, Rupa Anuga Prabhu, stood up on a seat and called out very loudly, all devotees must leave the airport lounge immediately. And although the devotees were usually submissive to their authority, he was a leading devotee, they didn't want to leave Prabhupada. But Prabhupada, on hearing this, immediately, without even thinking about it, immediately got up and started to leave. And Rupa Nuga said, no, no, not you, Prabhupada. So that was an example of Prabhupada's childlike innocence. He didn't think, well, I'm important, I'm not going to, I'm going to stay. So this considering oneself very important, it's a very strong psychological drive of the conditioned soul. For those of us who are raised in dog culture in the West, where dogs are is an integral part of life, we can notice this even among the dogs. The dog who belongs to a big important man knows that I am a dog of a big important man, and has that an egoistic sense of superiority over the dog who belongs to an unimportant man. Have you noticed? My informal psychological study of dogs in my childhood. In some ways, the Western culture is ahead of the Indian culture. Indian people have very little insight into the psychology of dogs. So we in the West, you see, we know so many important things that you don't know. Well, here it's more cow culture, and that's definitely there among the cows also. There's the leading cow, and she's the leader. In a herd of cows, one is number one, and she knows, and everyone else knows. Lower grade, Prabhupada calls this tamisra, anger phase of ignorance. It's a lower grade mentality. That even in the apparent field of spiritual realization, when you're supposed to be going up in spiritual realization, because of this low grade mentality, they never go up at all. They just remain stuck down in a very low grade mentality. They cannot understand, and to them it seems paradoxical, that the only way to go up in spiritual life is to recognize that we are actually down. That is our constitutional position. Only one who is in the highest grade of spiritual consciousness can actually state and feel, as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami famously said, Jagai madhai hoite mui shei papishto puri she kito hoite mui shei logishto jay mora nama shune tara punna khoi jay mora nam loi tara papa hoi. I am more sinful than Jagai and Madhai and lower than a worm in stool. Anyone who hears my name, their piety becomes reduced. Anyone who says my name, by doing so, becomes sinful. Now, sometimes the Prakriti Sahajya, so-called devotees, they also state, they make such statements. It's relatively easy to make such statements. To say it, just to say it is relatively easy. But in Vaishnav culture, it's understood that one who is humble is advanced. But it's easier to speak as if one is advanced than to actually be advanced. Therefore, among the Prakriti Sahajyas, they have perfected the art of appearing to be humble, so that people will think that they are advanced, and then they will appear. Then people will offer respect to them. I'm the most fallen. No, you're not. I am. How dare you say you're the most fallen? I'm like a worm in stool. Well, I'm a worm in the stool of someone with diarrhea. So, in this way, they go on with the dramatics. The whole desire for recognition is so puerile, which means childish. That can be there in Krishna, apparent Krishna consciousness also. This is the temple president. The temple president. Town president walks in. I am the temple president. Look at this devotee. He distributed so many books.
I distributed many books. Yeah.
This devotee's done so much, opened so many temples, has crores of rupees in the bank, is feeding so many hungry children every day. Well, at the time of death, we're supposed to meet Krishna, or maybe Yamaraj. We come in and say, well, you know, I'm the town president, you know me, right? I opened so many temples. I made so many disciples. You know, I'm Om Vishnupad Ashto Tarashata Sri Srimad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya, etc., etc. I have so many disciples. Yeah, but you have any love for Krishna? That's what we're looking for here. Yeah, I every day in my class I talk about love of Krishna. I know all about that. Again, talking about it's a lot easier than actually developing it. So the best thing is, don't be a temple president. Don't open any temples. Don't distribute any books. Don't preach. Just be a Babaji. Sit in a cave and chant lots of rounds. Then you won't have any egoism. Is that correct? Among the Babajis, you see, there's also this question of prestige is so strong. So the solution is, it doesn't depend so much on what we do, but the mentality in which we do it. It can be very difficult to get rid of this desire for egoism. Sincerity is required. Antata Misra involves considering death to be the ultimate end. Srila Prabhupada describes this mentality in one paragraph. Paraphrasing, Charavak Rinang Kritva Gritang Pibit Yavat Jivet Sukham Jivet Pasmi Bhutasya Dehasya King Puna Agamano Bhavet. Beg, borrow, or steal, eat ghee. As long as you live, live happily. This body will be converted into ashes, and there's no coming back. So, what does it matter what you do? Just enjoy life while you're here. Now, someone on hearing this, they'll think, yes, this is the real instruction. This may be quoted in a class, and then you just didn't hear all the rest of it, and he only heard this. I heard, you see, it's Sanskrit. Yavad jivet sukhang jivet. It's very high philosophy. It is, of course, the pig's philosophy and the dog's philosophy and the worm in stool's philosophy also. Slight adjustment, but the principle, I mean, for the worm in stool, he doesn't eat ghee, he eats stool, but the principle is the same. Yavad jivet sukhang jivet. Live, as long as you live, live happily, enjoy yourself. Prabhupada writes, this atheistic conception of life is killing human civilization. In the modern age, the term civilization is measured in terms of big buildings, big highways, big educational institutions teaching people engineering, medicine, architecture, and so on. This is considered the standard of civilization. Some time ago, I saw a poster with pictures of various cities of Africa. There was pictures, photographs, and there was the name of the city, Lagos, Johannesburg, Nairobi, and so on. And every picture, it showed skyscraper building. So I guess the point of the poster was to demonstrate that Africa has become civilized. As you see, we also have big, tall buildings, as if there's nothing in Africa but tall buildings. This is considered the standard of civilization by persons who consider material enjoyment the prime necessity of life. In the actual concept of civilization, it means to be detached from material enjoyment. A person is considered advanced by his ability to live with minimal facilities, tolerate various natural disturbances such as heat and cold. And that is the difference between Vedic civilization and materialistic, grossly materialistic civilization. Not knowing anything about the spirit soul is called tamas, which means darkness, ignorance. This is the basic condition of the material world. There are the three qualities of material nature, sattva, raja, and tama, which are translated as goodness, passion, and ignorance. But the underlying principle of all of them is ignorance. Sattva gun, without knowledge of Krishna, that is also ignorance. Rajogun, that's also ignorance. Almost everyone thinks that he is the body. He has no information of the soul. Now, getting back to the impersonalists, those who are within the Vedic culture, they cultivate the knowledge that I am not the body, but I am soul. But although they theoretically understand I'm not the body, but that I'm soul, they have a gross misconception of the nature of the soul. They think that, well, I am the soul, and there's only one soul. It means I'm God. And traditionally, those who are cultivating this consciousness, they would perform austerities and they would take spiritual cultivation very seriously. So at least there was some chance, despite their gross misconception of themselves as being aspiring to be God, there was some purification by the austerities and study of Vedic literature. So Srila Prabhupada describes that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the Mayavadi sannyasis of Varanasi, that even though they were very offensive, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu removed that offense by his preaching to them, they were able to appreciate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because they had some background of piety, of austerity and Vedic study. But in the modern age, people, they just think, well, I'm one with everything, I'm God, and they don't do any austerities, they just think that I'm God. And they'll read some books on Vedanta, or what they consider to be Vedanta. And therefore you get all these clowns like that. Who's that? Jaggi Vasudev, and you know, just talking, just some kind of stool coming out of the diarrhea coming out of their mouth, and some, all one, no need to speak. He speaks, there's no need to speak, and so many, just complete gibberish, and they just think, oh, I am God, I am one, I am light, all is one, all is I. And get on with the sex. With sex, see, it's all is one, one is all. So I am you, you are me. And so just, you know, have sex. It's fun. Why not? So all these conditions of ignorance, they They're interrelated. It may seem that someone has come to a high stage by meditation and they've become elevated to the spiritual platform. But if they don't worship Krishna, yena ravindaksha vimukta maninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhayaha aruhya kritrena parampadang tatav patantyadho anadrita yushmadangraha. One who, even by taking great pain and difficult austerities, actually become elevated to the spiritual platform, they fall down again for the sin of neglecting the lotus feet of Krishna. They think they are liberated, but they're not. So they eventually fall down to the situation of the pig and the dog. Of course, yeah. Moha, yeah. This ignorance of not knowing the soul, identifying the body, that expands from the, and the body, let me enjoy, that expands. Ato griha kshetra sutapta pitair janasya mohoyam aham mameti. The moha, thinking of I, me, and mine, then this expands into our identification with our home, our country, our wife, our children, our bank balance, and mahamoha, to be mad after material enjoyment, especially prominent in this age of Kali. People, overcome by the mode of ignorance, people don't even think of the consequences of what they're doing. They'll take intoxication without and then maybe beat their wife or drive a car fast and kill people without considering the effect. Just let me enjoy this moment, and how I have to suffer afterward, they never consider. It's so foolish. They'll eat meat and they don't consider the sinful consequences which will accrue from this. So this is a very brief look at a very big subject. In the Shastra gives us various perspectives on the material world. Dukhalayama Shashvatam. In two words, the whole material world is described. The place of misery where everything is temporary. Bhavesmin klishamananam avidya kama kama bihi. In this material world of repeated birth and death, there is simply suffering and troubles on the background of ignorance and working for material enjoyment based on material desire. So in this verse also, it gives an analysis of the ignorance, which is the defining characteristic of the material world. So as I stated at the beginning of this talk, this Srimad Bhagavatam in one verse and one purport gives more meaningful knowledge than in all the universities of the world. Vidya Bhagavata Didhi. The actual knowledge is, the actual standard of knowledge is given by the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is only one verse. There are 18,000 verses. Imagine how learned one can become by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Not only does it give perfect analysis of the material world, but perfect analysis of the spiritual world. So everyone should study Srimad Bhagavatam. Everyone here is a great candidate for studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Because if you have committed yourself to sit here for 7 days and listen to this kind of talk, you're not an ordinary person. That's a fact. Now don't get puffed up. There are very few people who have any interest to hear these topics, most unfortunately. To sit and listen to this hardcore philosophy. I mean, it's just Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. This is the subject. It was suggested to me this morning that I speak on one topic throughout the 7 days. I am. The subject is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, this scientific delineation of topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not systematically, no doubt. That you can do in your time. You have to do your homework.
அதை நீங்க உங்களுடைய வீடுகளில் செய்யலாம். உங்க எல்லாருக்கும் வீட்டு பயிற்சியும் அவசியம்.
We are all students and we all have to do our homework. Homework is studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So, all of you who don't have a set of Srimad Bhagavatam, this great lacuna in your life, lacuna means like a gap or something missing, can be immediately filled up.
The class that follows is the part 2 of the previous class given by His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami Maharaj.
We become accustomed to singing songs expressing such intense humility. How many of us, as we were singing that, were feeling that if I don't get the mercy of our spiritual master, of Srila Prabhupada, I just might as well just die? Easy to say, not so easy to feel. The acharyas have expressed their own genuine emotions in the form of these kirtans and thus given us the direction. This is where we have to go. So some day we may, as he's saying, kobe heno kripa labhya ejan, when will I get such mercy to actually feel like that? It's very difficult to bring that feeling into our heart because we have just the opposite tendency. This morning I spoke about egoism. Not only do we have egoism, but we're accustomed to nourish that egoism at every moment. Garvata, I think the standard word is ahankar, yeah. When we say we have ahankar, it's almost not like we don't have it. We so much identify with it that it's inseparable from our very being. Actually, ahankar is inseparable from our being. The term ahankar in itself is, in and of itself, is not bad. If one thinks, I am a servant of Krishna, that is also ahankar. It's a sense of I-ness, which is also called ahamta, I-ness. But it's the false ego of thinking, Ishvaro ham, aham bhogi, siddho ham, balavan sukhi, of thinking, I am the boss, I am the enjoyer, I am perfect, powerful and happy. And this is the false ego that we nourish at every moment. We cannot think of doing anything. We're not even aware of the fact that we're always, what's that word? We're always visualizing ourselves in terms of Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham balavan sukhi. Conceptualizing ourselves. I don't know what the word means. And even when we're totally beaten and crushed and smashed by Maya, then in our imagination we imagine that someday I'll become big and I'll crush those who are crushing me. We resort to daydreams that actually are not a telawala pulling this cart. I'm not a laborer, but actually I'm a king sitting on a big throne and I have so many people cringing in front of me. So all spiritualists recognize that this ahankar is foolishness and it's to be discarded. But actually in Krishna consciousness we don't stress that as much as the Mayavadis do. They're always in the mood of negation. But for a devotee, he simply worships Krishna, takes up the service of Krishna, and then the idea is that automatically the sense of thinking in terms of aham mameti, I, me and mine, that becomes replaced by the sense of Krishna and Krishna's. But then how do we see egoism almost also among devotees? The thing is, if we don't stop that, we don't change that mentality when we come into Krishna consciousness, then we don't really come into Krishna consciousness at all. unless we have the, you won't have this in Tamil, the eureka experience, the sudden realization, ding, that I'm a servant of Krishna, then we can go on in Krishna consciousness, but we never got the idea that we're supposed to not be nourishing our ahankar, our false ego. So we're basically in the same consciousness as we were previously. And the thing is, instead of trying to show ourselves to be big by having a big car and a big house and a big job, we show ourselves to be big as being a big devotee. And or in the Sahajya culture, where to be considered is humble, is considered, to show yourself as being humble is considered very advanced, then you nourish your ahankara by showing yourself to be very humble, by showing yourself to be a very small devotee. So it's for those who don't actually take up the spirit that I'm here to serve, not to prove myself, then it becomes, spiritual advancement is, where is it? It doesn't exist. You know what this means? To prove yourself, to show yourself. In materialistic civilization, now it's prominent in India also, especially among the educated people, there's this idea that you have to show yourself, be a success. You have to do something by which other people will notice you. Leave your mark on the world. So in our Krishna conscious movement, we're also trying to do something significant in the world. So someone may come in and say that, yeah, see, I'm going to do so much preaching and I'm going to make so many people devotees. We'll have a competition to see who can make most devotees. I'm going to make the most disciples. And then instead of preaching out of compassion for the conditioned souls, it's just like, okay, another number, someone else under my control. One of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's first disciples, he was preaching and bringing so many people for initiation to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who said to him that these are not my disciples, they're your disciples, you're just bringing them for name and fame. After so many years in the mission, he said to him, you never knew me, you've never seen me. So there may be a difference between what appears to be Krishna consciousness and what actually is Krishna consciousness. But somehow some people, they get into this consciousness and this egoism, and even they're practicing Krishna consciousness, it's very difficult to communicate anything to them. They're just like in their own world of what I am doing. They can only respond to praise. I did this, I did that, I'm going to do this, I have this project. And if you try to point out, well, actually, there's something wrong with your attitude or something, then they get angry or depressed. It's very difficult to help such people, even though they're chanting Hare Krishna and they're doing all the things they're supposed to be doing, but somehow or other they didn't understand the basic principle. What does it actually mean to be a humble servant of Krishna? Was Prabhupada a humble servant of Krishna? No one would dare to say anything. But yes, Srila Prabhupada was very aristocratic. You can see he would walk with his head up in the air like this. Once Srila Prabhupada, he was coming out, he was dressed, I can't remember, he was going to a program or leaving for some engagement. He dressed very nicely and walking in a very regal way, and one of his disciples said to him, that Prabhupada, you are just like a king. Prabhupada said, I am much more than any king. Is that humble? What does humility mean? The Mayavadis, they have this idea that being near ahankar, being without ahankar, means without any sense of I-ness. You don't impose yourself on anyone. completely without any motivation to do anything, just being. They're just being, that's all. And sometimes they laugh a little bit or smile a little bit, and they radiate a sense of goodness and well-being. In their understanding, being without ahankar means that you're always very nice to people, you never speak in a way that would disturb them in any way. The Prakriti Sahajyas have a similar idea. It's not without basis in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Prani matre monobake udbegnadibo, means that by the mind or the words, not to give any living being any disturbance. What is the practical manifestation of that? Srila Prabhupada famously said to one idiot who claimed, I am God, Srila Prabhupada roared at him, you are not God, you are dog. And the dog, who thought he was God, was just like thrown back by the force of Prabhupada's expression and just sat down with a hall full of people cheering Prabhupada. So what does it mean to be free of ahankar? It means to be free of the sense of any other sense that but that I am the servant of Krishna. So personally, I'm not very attracted to this kind of just smiling and holding a flower kind of sadhu. I don't find it has any basis in Shastra or in the behavior of our acharyas. If we read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll find it's intense. The search for the truth or the service of the truth, it's an intense matter. It's not just a matter of smiling and being nice. Rather, one has to give up all other engagements than surrender to Krishna. Sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. It's a total demand of Krishna to fully surrender to Him. Among pious Hindus, it's quite popular children's shloka chanting competitions. So they may get a prize for chanting the shlokas. Sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. Very good, first prize. If they actually knew what it meant, they would never let their children chant it at all. Or if they come in contact with a member of ISKCON, not Neo-ISKCON, actual ISKCON, then who will explain the meaning to them, and they say, oh yeah, okay, all right, that's what I'll do. I'll surrender to Krishna. They become most upset. The parents become upset. That's why they prefer to go to Mayavadis, who manage to cook up the shlokas in their ahankar brand pressure cooker. So it just all becomes one big glob of one flavor, one substance, khichdi. No intenseness, no chilies. It just becomes the subject of a shloka chanting competition. Krishna didn't say to Arjuna that, well, Arjuna, you were a eunuch, so all right, if you leave the battle, you become like a eunuch and you can maintain yourself by winning shloka chanting competitions. Therefore, I'll teach you Bhagavad Gita. Because you're my very dear friend, I'm teaching you this confidential knowledge by which you can become completely useless and maintain yourself by winning shloka competitions. Actually, the message of Bhagavad Gita, it's demanding. Someone can do a Veda-based search and see how many times the word murha or permutations of the word murha comes up in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's not talking to a eunuch, he's talking to a hero. Someone who's strong enough to hear the truth. Krishna didn't want Arjuna to be a eunuch. Krishna wanted Arjuna to clearly understand what is the fact, and on the basis of that, fully surrender to Krishna. But the bogus preachers, the Mayavadis, they've taken the Gita and Bhagavatam and they try to make it a eunuch's version. All the verses of Bhagavatam that require, they demand our surrender to Krishna, they never speak such verses. They'll only speak some stories of different avatars. They convert, in their imagination, they convert Krishna into some, I know what the Indian alternative is, into some kind of Walt Disney figure. Did Walt Disney make it to India yet? I guess he must have done it. All the other things. You have Walt Disney in Croatia? Yeah. Just like, you know, everything's nice and everything's smiling. And they have Gita recitations with violins playing. And there were no violins as Krishna was speaking Bhagavad Gita. There were people standing around with swords and bows and arrows ready to kill each other. Just try to understand the intensity of the situation. And that's the intense situation that we are all in. It's a question of life and death. We can live in Krishna or die and die and die again. So this kind of idea of negating egoism or becoming humble that is promoted by the Mayavadis and Prakriti Sahajiyas is just a hoax. Prabhupada would often criticize these Babajis who lock themselves away and do their so-called chanting. What are they doing to serve Krishna? We want Arjuna. Arjuna was fighting and killing and totally free from false ego. Completely surrendered to Krishna. Fighting means you have to have desire, anger, totally involved, not detached. But that desire and anger and attachment, because it's fully centered on Krishna, is totally pure. Again, one can imitate that on the platform of ahankar. If we just go around calling people mudhas and think that now I've become a great devotee, that's also nonsense. Srila Prabhupada was preaching so strongly because he wanted to operate, remove the ahankar from the foolish people who were acting against their own self-interest by refusing to surrender to Krishna. So sometimes it's said, well, we have to become as pure as Prabhupada, then only we should speak like Prabhupada. Impractical. People are mudhas, this we've learned from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So we have to help them, and it won't help them by simply nourishing their egoism. So anyway, there's a few more words on the